Welcome to Write Medicine, where we explore best practices in creating continuing education content for health professionals. I'm Alex Housen, and I'm on a mission to share expert insights and field perspectives on topics like adult learning, content creation techniques, effective formats, and trends in healthcare that influence the type of continuing education content that we create. Write Medicine is the premier podcast for CME CPD professionals like you, wherever you are in the content creation process. Join us.
If you are creating health information for patients, or even for doctors and other healthcare professionals, or even for businesses, there is research that shows that everybody prefers plain language, which is more accessible, because it's easier to understand and consume.
Are you unknowingly excluding audiences with your CME, clinical-facing or patient-facing content? As a CME professional, it's crucial to ensure that your content reaches and resonates with diverse audiences. In a field that shapes the clinical practice and well-being of so many, accuracy and accessibility are non-negotiable. Today, Virginia Chachati, pharmacist turned medical writer, joins me to explore strategies and best practices for crafting inclusive, accessible content that empowers readers and improves health outcomes. In episode 109, you'll learn how to optimize your content for people with varying levels of health literacy and digital skills, discover tools and resources to help you create content that needs accessibility standards, and understand the impact of inclusive writing on audience engagement and health equity. Don't miss this opportunity to elevate your inclusive content creation skills. I know in previous conversations, you've talked a little bit about accessibility as something that you're focused on in your work. Tell us a little bit about what that means to you and how you approach making medical writing accessible and inclusive.
Yeah, great question. I do talk a lot about accessibility, and I was having a chat the other day at PIF, which is the Patient Information Forum, and they have a set of standards which they've developed over the years that a lot of charity organizations and the ABPI and some commercial organizations, and now medical writers and some medical agencies are also catching up to the fact that we do need more accessible health information. And what that means is we are creating health information which is accurate and evidence-based and reviewed by medical people, but the actual people on the receiving end who are going to use that information are often patients or people who look after people in need of care, and they can't understand the information. So it doesn't matter how accurate or evidence-based it is. If they cannot understand the information and they have difficulties with health literacy, which is a fancy word of saying they can't understand health words or health terms like arrhythmia or ventricular or anything else, like ulcer, for example, even that kind of word, those people need to be able to access the information. So by making it accessible, you're making it understandable. And so in that way, they can actually use it and benefit from it. And if you are creating health information for patients, or even for doctors and other healthcare professionals, or even for businesses, there is research that shows that everybody prefers plain language, which is more accessible, because it's easier to understand and consume, and you don't have to try and figure out what it means as you're trying to read it. And even my husband the other day, he was reading a journal article and he said, what are all of these words they've just made up just to make themselves sound fancy? And I said, that's lazy writing, because if they had taken a moment to reread what they had written and pretend that they didn't know what they were talking about, they would have put in that effort to make it a bit clearer. And clear and easy reading is often very difficult writing, because the amount of times I've had to rewrite 5 sentences for a 60-second video for the NHS, it can take me 2 hours to write those 5 sentences because I have to think about who's going to watch this? Is English their second language? Can they understand from the words or do I need pictures to support this in the video? And how likely is it that they will actually remember this information? So it has to be so simple that you understand it, but also remember it so that you can act on it. And being accessible also means taking into consideration their digital literacy as well. So if they do not know how to put on closed caption or the CC, then have you put subtitles on the video for them so they don't need to try and figure that out? Maybe they're hard, you know, they can't hear very well or they can't see very well. So they're very dependent on the audio and alt text as well and any metadata that describes what you are showing. Because a lot of times we use visuals with our writing and we don't actually refer or describe the visual. And it's so important to do that because that makes it way more accessible. And I think the National Society for the Royal Society for, I think it's for blind people. They went viral on Twitter because they described a picture of a model from Calvin Klein in the alt text, which was lovely because it meant that the person could experience the picture without having to see it. And I think it's being mindful of how diverse we are as human beings and making sure that whatever message you have, you are writing it and presenting it in a way that everyone can access and enjoy or use that information to help benefit their health. So that's accessibility. And then also I could go into, you know, different fonts, serif and sans serif, and then also different colors and the contrast ratio. There are lots of tools and also web accessibility as well. If you're hyperlinking text as anchor text, you know, you should try as much as possible not to highlight words like click here and actually describe what they're clicking on. So that, you know, if you want to find out more about, I don't know, acne treatments, then they can click on those words and actually go and find out about acne treatments rather than click here, which sounds really mysterious and not accessible and is also very small and too difficult to actually tap on a small screen like a mobile phone. So these are all things I've, you know, learned over the years, and that's why it takes so long to create actual proper accessible health content, because you need to think of all these little things. And if you miss one, you are being exclusive. So you're not being as inclusive as you could be, and you're not having as wide a reach and impact as you could be. So it's worth it to do all these little things and make it more accessible. And I think it should be the standard, which is why I'm so passionate about working at the Patient Information Forum, because they have the PIFTIC, which is the standard for health content that the NHS has adopted, the Academy of Medical Royal Colleges, the World Health Organization, WHO, and then also now YouTube Health. If you want to have a badge that says, you know, this channel is made by a health professional licensed in the UK or US or wherever.
So all the things that you've just mentioned there, it sounds like those are great resources. And if you share the links, I'll make sure that they're in the show notes. What other resources do you go to support your accessibility work or your approach to accessibility?
So there are tools. So for example, the WCAG Web Accessibility Guidelines for Writers is available online. It's free and it's a standard. And people don't know this fact, but if you have a website and it's really inaccessible, because WCAG are a standard for the internet, they can actually ask you to make changes to your website or they can take it down. So it's in your best interest to make your website as accessible as possible if you're doing things online. So WCAG accessibility guidelines, then also the PIF guidelines as well. The NHS, they have guidelines. There's also the gov.uk for the UK audience. they have guidelines as well for styles for their particular website though. So if you're looking more for health, then I recommend the NHS style guide, which again is available on the internet for free. It's very long. It's a very, if it was a book, it would be a very thick one. So, and yeah, and then also there are always research papers that talk about accessibility for specific groups like dyslexia and people who are on the spectrum of autism. So I think the UK government also brought out some guidelines for those, which I linked to on my LinkedIn as well. And it's always good to read around your audience and see how they access information, because maybe it's not something that's digital that they need. Maybe it's something printed that they need, because some people don't have access to the internet because maybe they can't financially afford it, or they can't access it from home. So they don't have a computer or a phone and they are dependent on going to the library. So, you know, it depends how mobile they are. So it's taking those into consideration as well, their lifestyle. And I read a lot of books as well. So things like How to Write Clearly by Tom Albrighton. It's a great book. Love that book. It's cheap and it's written very clearly. And I love it when authors are actually speaking in the way that they are recommending you to write. So that's a great book. And then there's 55 Writing Tools as well by Roy Clark. I really like that book. And yeah, I would say just read around, follow other people who are thought leaders in accessibility. So I follow quite a few of those on LinkedIn and see what they're saying. Even things like how to use emojis in an accessible way. So some people put emojis in the middle of their sentence, which isn't great, or at the end of their sentence. So I tend to put it at the beginning, and I try to use fewer emojis now, because when someone's using a screen reader, they'll read out the picture of the emoji, which might change the meaning of your sentence. So to keep that in mind. So yeah, those are some places, and I'll give you links and references and things to put in the description.
Yeah, that's great. We'll include those in the show notes, as well as links to resources that we've shared previously on the podcast and in the episode with Abaha Leaptag and also Karen Roy and Bavel Shah. We did a whole episode on infographics, so I'll make sure to share those links as well. Keep doing what you're doing, Virginia Tachati, community builder, accessibility advocate. Thanks for sharing your wisdom and insights with listeners of Right Medicine.
Thank you.
Here are my takeaways from my conversation with Virginia. First, accessible CME clinical and patient-facing content is not only about being accurate and evidence-based. It's also about creating content that's easy to understand and act upon for people with varying levels of health literacy. Second, inclusive writing and content creation goes beyond plain language. It involves optimizing content for digital accessibility, considering audience lifestyles and preferences, and using supportive visuals. We've talked about this before on the podcast in earlier episodes with Karen Roy and Bavel Shah from Infograph Ed and Alison Kickle from Bonham Continuing Education. And third, by prioritizing inclusivity in your work, you can play a really important role in advancing health equity and patient engagement. So here are three steps you can take toward accessibility and inclusivity today. First, familiarize yourself with health literacy principles and accessibility guidelines, such as the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines and the Patient Information Forum's TIC standard. Second, audit your existing content for accessibility and inclusivity, identifying areas for improvement and then implementing best practices. And third, always be educating yourself on inclusive writing strategies by following thought leaders, attending workshops, and engaging with resources shared in the episode's show notes. And if you don't already have a copy, grab the CME CE Content Creators Inclusion Toolkit. Of course, there's a link in the show notes. We're back on Monday with Monday Mentor, And on April the 24th, Juliana Merton joins me to talk about best practices in creating social media-based CME content. In the meantime, don't miss out on other Right Medicine episodes. Subscribe to the podcast on your favorite listening platform and sign up for Right Medicine Insider for CME and podcast updates. Until next time, keep listening, keep learning.